I mean, who else would you feature on Mother's Day other than Liz Lemon, right? I mean, if you are not familiar with the Lemon, you should be. She's an interesting character. So in this role, this is obviously Tina Fey. It's from the series 30 Rock. And she plays the lead writer for a sitcom that airs, really a comedy variety show that airs on NBC. And as you see in this clip, Liz, while herself at this point is not biologically a mother, she plays mom to lots of childlike characters on the set. There's always these kind of crazy issues that come up, and Liz, who herself is a fairly flawed person, is regularly kind of nurturing and caring for and leading this group of people in a way that only a mother could do. She is the mentor, the mom of the set. And you know, in every great story, there are these wise mentor figures, these sages that you encounter that help propel the hero or heroine forward to become who they need to be in order for the story to go in its intended direction. You're probably familiar with a bunch. If I say, like, who's the wise person in your favorite story, you might think of Yoda in Star Wars or Mary Poppins in Mary Poppins. Maybe Morpheus in The Matrix or Mickey from the Rocky films, Grandma Tala from Moana, and, of course, characters like Liz Lemon from 30 Rock. It's just a part of what makes a story a good story. And in fact, even the term mentor comes from one of the original great stories, Homer's The Odyssey, in which a character named Mentor actually served as this wise sage for Odysseus as he went on his journey, helping him navigate the perils that he encountered. Every good story needs a mentor. Now, we've been in the middle of a series we've been calling Unseen, where we're looking at the book of Ruth, which is this small story that we find in the Old Testament that talks about this character, Ruth. And it's a great story. It's short, 4 chapters. And as you follow through, we learn a lot about the characters themselves, but also the ways in which almost subtly, in unseen ways, God is at work behind the scenes in moving the story towards its desired end, which is ultimately part of God's redemptive plan for the world. There's a bit of a twist, a surprise ending, if you will, that we'll get to next week. So you should come back and see how that goes. But up until this point, we've seen that there's been tragedy. So Ruth and Naomi and Orpah, who's another character who kind of left in the first chapter. So we have Naomi who moved because of a famine. She and her husband moved to Moab, a neighboring country. They took their sons with them while they were there. The father died. The sons got married. Then the sons died. And then Naomi goes to return to her nation. Orpah, one of her daughter-in-laws, stays. But Ruth goes with her, chooses to stay faithful to Naomi, to their relationship, to commit to her as she moves back to Israel. So they come to Israel, and last week we see that they encounter this guy, Boaz. As Carmen shared with us last week, Ruth goes kind of looking to find food because they have nothing to provide for themselves. As widows, they have no social status, they have no ability to make money, there's really nothing for them to do. So she goes and she kind of looks for, she goes to the fields where the men are gleaning the grain, and she looks for grain that's like laying along the side. And they meet this guy, Boaz, who has lots of land and instructs his workers to leave some extra wheat for her. Shows compassion and kindness to this person who's kind of an outsider, a castaway. And we learn something about him. We learn that he's what's called a kinsman redeemer. Now, it's kind of a weird cultural thing, but it's important for us to get the gist of the story. So a kinsman redeemer is kind of the nearest, closest relative who would care to kind of make sure that the family stuff was all in order. The way that one commentary describes this is in this way. The kinsman redeemer's role was to help recover the tribe's losses, whether those losses were human, judicial, or economic. So there was a person in the family, kind of the closest relative, who would be left with the responsibility of maintaining the well-being of the family. And so they realize that Boaz is someone who's, he's actually a family member who might take this role, who might kind of step in and care for Ruth. And so this act, while it, there's romantic overtures for sure, there's also a really straight up way in which this is an act of compassion, where here's a man who's kind of established himself in the community, who sees that his relative, distant relative, is in need. And they wonder, maybe this guy will kind of step forward and care for us, care for Ruth particularly. And that's when we get to Ruth chapter 3. And we see kind of how this all begins to play out. Now, I'll admit, there's some weird stuff in Ruth chapter 3. This whole kind of scenario of her going in and lying at Boaz's feet and uncovering his feet and all of that is a very different thing for us. My guess is, and we won't ask for a show of hands, but if I were to ask how many of you proposed to your current spouse in this way, my guess is it would only be two or three, right? Like, most of you probably didn't go with the lay at the feet, uncover them route. I could be wrong. Tell me later. But so there's some odd kind of cultural stuff here that is interesting, and if you want to talk about that, I'm happy to talk about that with you later, but it would bore most people. So we're not going to go there, but just know it's a little different. This actually wasn't very common. It's not kind of the way that people did it. But the thing that I was drawn to as I looked at this passage, and particularly thinking about Mother's Day, is the role that we see Naomi play in this whole scenario. Right, like, here's Ruth, this woman who's, she has no context for any of this cultural stuff. Like, what's a kinsman redeemer? How does one go about kind of making their way in this culture? Again, she's from a different country. The husband that she had has died. She has no idea. And in steps Naomi to offer a sense of guidance, leadership, direction, to help her navigate what steps she needs to take if she's going to make her way in the world, how she's actually going to figure this out. Up until this point, Naomi was kind of the needy person. Like, Ruth comes with Naomi to take care of her. But in this moment, Naomi comes to the fore as the one who has wisdom and direction to give her. Naomi acts as a mentor for Ruth in helping her navigate all of this. And this is often how God works in our lives. You know, it's interesting to think about, if you're the kind of person who regularly is trying to figure out what might God be saying to me, or how might God be leading me, or what's happening. Sometimes God does that in a way that is profound and happens just in kind of a personal experience with God, right? Like, you go alone and maybe you get a sense that you're supposed to do something. That happens sometimes. But most often, I'm convinced the way that we see God work, both in Scripture but also regularly in our lives, is through these wise people who seem to end up in our lives, sometimes almost by chance. But they're people who love God and love us and are speaking words of wisdom, helping us navigate the roads that we don't quite know how to handle on our own. This is Naomi, serving as a mentor for Ruth. Now, as you think about this idea of mentor, it's actually a fairly trendy idea, right? Particularly if you think about business. I was in Barnes & Noble on Friday, I think, and I was looking through some different books about mentoring, and if you go to the business section, which is like one of the, you know, the biggest sections in the front, there's like three or four rows of business-focused books, there's this whole section on mentoring. And it's kind of a trendy thing in business, right? Finding mentors who can help you navigate your way up the ladder to figure out what it is that you can do in this career that you've chosen, how to get ahead. So that's normal to think about that. In fact, while I was there at Barnes & Noble reading some of these books, just to my right, and I'm not an eavesdropper really, but if you're going to talk loud, I'm going to listen. There's two women sitting talking. One is a young woman probably in her mid-20s, and then another woman who's at least twice her age who's sitting across from her, and they're talking about this young woman's experience graduating from grad school and thinking about starting her career, and she's asking this woman questions, and she's got a notebook and she's writing them down, and this woman is just talking about her experience of career and family and how all of that has worked together. And I'm in awe. I'm like, this woman who has sought out this other woman is brilliant. Like, I wish I would have thought to do that when I was in my 20s. That's so smart. This is a really, it's a great idea. But so often we confine it to things like business, and we don't take it into account when we think about maybe some of the most important things in our lives, like our personal lives, our relationships, our spiritual life, who we're becoming. We assume that that's something we kind of got to figure out on ourselves. That's this individual thing that I kind of need to figure out, and we actually feel a little guilty if we go to other people and ask them, right? Like, I shouldn't need help figuring this out. Everybody else figures it out on their own. I should be able to figure it out. But that's not actually how life works. Most often, the best things in our lives are the product of learning from others who have lived them out, made some mistakes, and come out the other end. We need other people, mentors, Naomis in our lives, who can walk with us in some of this most important stuff. That's why things like child dedication are so important, because it acknowledges tangibly the need for other people to be influencing us, to be leading us forward, to help us become who we were intended to be. In one of these fancy mentoring business books called Never Eat Alone, written by Keith Ferrazzi, he observes this about the effect of mentors. He writes, "Research now backs up the belief that whom you associate with is crucial to who you become. Dr. David McClelland of Harvard University researched the qualities and characteristics of high achievers in our society. What he found was that your choice of a reference group, the people you hang out with, was an important factor in determining your future success or failure." Not just that what you achieve is influenced by the people around you, but who you become. Your character is shaped by the people you put around you. Paul, the apostle, one of the early church leaders, writes about this in a way that is kind of from a negative angle, but it says the same thing. In his first letter to the Corinthians, chapter 15, verse 33, he writes, "Bad company corrupts good character." Bad company corrupts good character. If you have kids, you've been around kids, you've taught kids or whatever, you know, you've probably seen similar words come out of your mouth, right? Be careful who you hang out with, because whoever you hang out with is going to determine who you become. The people you spend your time with are going to shape who you're becoming. And it's not just for kids. Leadership guru Jim Rohn famously said, "You are the average of the five people you most associate with." You're the average of the five people you most associate with. Now, that might be an ultra-simplistic way to look at it. And, you know, is it five? Is it seven? Is it three? I don't know. But the point is that the people you surround yourself with are going to shape you. You don't have to want it or not. The people you surround yourself with shape you. Who you are is largely determined by who you hang with. Jesus actually modeled this. If you read the biographies of Jesus, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and you see the way that Jesus decided his plan for working out kind of God's kingdom purposes in the world, what God was doing in the world, the way he did that was to invite a bunch of people to be with him. A small group of people. We often call them his disciples or his students, to invite them to spend time with him. Listen to how Mark describes this in Mark's biography of Jesus, Mark chapter 3. Mark writes, "He, Jesus, climbed a mountain and invited those he wanted with him. They climbed together. He settled on 12 and designated them apostles. The plan was that they would be with him, and he would send them out to proclaim the word and give them authority to banish demons." I find it fascinating and noteworthy that the first thing on the list of what Jesus hoped for his followers was that they would be with him. Not that they would learn lots of great stuff or get it down pat so they could articulate all of the right things, but that they would spend time with him. This is how he determined to shape their character, so that they could be the kind of people who could carry the message forward, the message of his life and death and resurrection. It wasn't just that they needed to get the words down, it was that they needed to be changed by spending time with him and by spending time with each other. One of the things you'll learn as you read through the New Testament, if you have, if you're doing the Renew reading with us, a group of us are reading through the New Testament together in 90 days, and one of the things you'll notice is that it's almost never written to individuals. It's written to communities, groups of people, churches who are trying to figure out how to do this together. The way of Jesus is the way that is a way that is intended to be lived out in community around others who are kind of figuring it out together. Because this principle is true, that who you hang with is going to determine who you become. The people you spend your time around will shape you. There's a great example of this in an interaction I came across between Nora Ephron and Lena Dunham, of all people. You may be familiar with Nora Ephron, or at least her work. She's a humorist, essayist, screenwriter, and director. Movies like When Harry Met Sally, You've Got Mail, lots of others. She was an avid advocate for women in all walks of life, but particularly in Hollywood. She died in 2012, and after her death, Lena Dunham, who's the creator of the HBO series Girls, wrote a reflection on her relationship with Ephron in The New Yorker. Just before Ephron had passed, a couple of years, she had met Ephron. She'd kind of admired her from a distance for years and years and years, and suddenly they got a chance to be together. And they quickly became friends, and Ephron kind of took her under her wing, even so much that she would invite Lena Dunham to join her at family events. They became really close. In her essay in The New Yorker, Dunham writes this about her relationship with Ephron. She said, "When searching my inbox last night for an email from Nora, to get the specifics of her phrasing, I came upon this sign-off to a short but sweet one thanking me for lunch. See you somewhere, hugs and kisses. Somewhere, it turns out, is everywhere. I see Nora in the home I wouldn't live in if not for her. The shot list I make in the van to set in the morning, and the jacket I slip into when the sun comes down. She always sent links along with the tips. I see her with the craft services on set, when the craft services on set isn't up to par, or in the process of getting to know a man who seems to understand. I see her in the worst hair moments and the best soup moments. I know I am only one of hundreds of women, people, who will miss Nora's company, and millions who will miss her voice. The opportunity to be friends with Nora in the last year of her life informs the entirety of mine. I am so grateful." That last phrase stuck with me after reading this. The opportunity to be friends with Nora in the last year of her life informs the entirety of mine. And I wonder if you have any relationships like that. People who maybe you knew them for decades, or maybe it was just kind of a brief meeting at that conference or that event. But something that they've offered you, some way in which they've invested in you, has stuck with you, shapes the way you see everything, or maybe at least everything in a particular area. Many of us have been influenced by these kinds of people, these kinds of Naomis. For a lot of us, it's the people we celebrate today. It's our moms. Or maybe it's not our biological moms, but other women who've been in our lives. For others, it's men, our dads or others who've come alongside of us. But all of us have been influenced by someone deeply. This is one of the reasons why I am so proud of the ministries that happen here, particularly with our kids. When I think about things like our Highway 712 ministry, that's for our 7th to 12th graders, or Avenue 46 with our 4th to 6th graders, or Kid Street that goes from, you know, babies up until 6th grade. I mean, they do a lot of great stuff in these groups, a lot of great teaching about Jesus and what it means to learn to know and love him and follow him. But even more than that, they do a lot of investing, a lot of listening, a lot of loving, a lot of modeling the character of Jesus in ways that are deeply influential. You don't see a lot of this, but I and Andrew and some others who are kind of behind the scenes, we get the privilege of seeing how these volunteers don't just show up to the regular meetings that they have and do their thing and then leave, but they're throughout the week reaching out to these kids. They're inviting them out to grab a milkshake, or they're taking them with them to serve in the community. They're even asking for help in moving things from their house because they know that they need to invest in these kids, not just tell them stuff. Telling them things is important, but it can't be all. And again, I've seen these people invest in the kids here in ways that I can say, I mean, speaking as a dad who has kids in the youth ministry, has deeply shaped my kids and many of the kids who are part of our church here. But it's not just in the kids stuff. I see it in individuals all the time here who go above and beyond the, like, handshake on a Sunday morning, how you doing, to, hey, let's grab a cup of coffee, or let's get together this week. I want to hear more about what's going on in your lives. And those are the kinds of relationships. If you've ever had someone who's done that for you, you know how crucial that is. And I never quite got it until I met people who never could identify those people in their lives. And if you ever meet someone who can't identify that somewhere in their life there was someone who invested in them intentionally, there's a real sense of like they missed out. Like there was something lacking in their education and their development that they long for. But one of the remarkable things that I've seen in people who've had that experience where they kind of mourn, like, I never had that. If they will turn and become that for someone else, oftentimes you'll see the things they lost in not having a mentor filled as they choose into being a mentor for others, as they choose into investing in the lives of others. Rather than mourning the, like, oh, I wish somebody would have done that for me, choosing to do that for someone else brings for them growth and development and transformation in ways that maybe they would have lost otherwise. I think this is a key theme as we look at Scripture and ask, how does God invite us into his story? How does God work his plan out in our lives? Regularly and consistently, God speaks to us through the wisdom of mentors, through the wisdom of people in our life who are pointing us in the right direction. And not perfect people. This is why I think the Liz Lemon illustration is so apt, because so often she ends up doing the right thing on accident. And if we wait for the perfect mentor, if we're looking for someone to invest in us who's figured their entire life out, we will wait forever. But if we open ourselves up to the wisdom of the people around us, we might just find that even really imperfect people who stumble along the way have a lot to offer us if we have ears to hear. So I want to invite you this morning to think about two things as we kind of end our time together. We're going to take just a minute. I think we'll have just a few moments to interact with some Q&A each week. We try to give some space to ask questions and interact a little bit around the sermon. But I want to give you a couple of things to think about before we move there. The first is a question. I guess both are questions. But the first is more about self-reflection. Is there a Naomi in your life? Is there someone who, along the way, has invested in you in a way that has changed the course of your life? And maybe it's not some drastic change where you would have been, I don't know, destitute and, you know, begging, and now you are kind of on top of the world. But somewhere in between there, where you realize there are some steps that you took that moved you to become who you are that you probably wouldn't have taken had it not been for that person. And again, it could be a biological parent, like a mom or a dad, a big sister, a big brother, uncle, aunt. Or it could have been that coworker, maybe a youth leader, a friend who took the time to walk with you, to put an arm around you, to encourage you, and your life has never been the same. What is one way that you could say thank you? What could you do to say thank you to that person? On today, on Mother's Day, when we think about saying thank you to our moms, I'd like to invite you to make sure you do that. Say thank you to your mom. And think about who are the other moms, who are the other Naomis, who are the other people in your life who've invested in you, who you could say thank you to. And saying thank you is important because it's not just cultivating a heart of gratitude, though that's really important. But I think the things that we are thankful for are the things that we emulate. The things that we remind ourselves, the things that we look back and we're like, oh, that was good, I'm grateful for that, are the things that we tend to want to be like. And so choosing to say thank you is a practice that helps kind of cement in our hearts that this is something I want to be true for me. This is something about who I want to become. I want to be this for someone else. So how could you thank your Naomi today, this week? Maybe it's a card, maybe it's a phone call, maybe it's an email. Now, a lot of people don't read emails, just a heads up. Whatever it might be, take them out for coffee or whatever. Take a minute to say thank you. First of all, take a minute to reflect on how your life has been shaped by other people. And then take a minute to reach out and to say thank you. And then secondly, is another question, and that's simply, where in your life is there a Ruth who may need a Naomi? Where in your sphere of influence is there someone that you could come alongside and invest in? Again, could be your family. If you have kids, that's a great place to start. But it could be beyond that. It could be coworkers or friends or other relationships you have. You might not feel like you have anything to offer, but I'll tell you what, so many people waste so much time mourning what they don't have that they forget to recognize what they do. And yes, you don't have all the answers. Let me just kind of free you from that. If you're sitting there thinking you have all the answers, let me encourage you that you are wrong. If you are anxious to find somebody to impart all of your wisdom, you just might want to check yourself a little bit and go, okay. Think about that. Maybe invite your spouse to speak into that if you're married, or a good friend, help you kind of navigate through that, because none of us knows everything, right? But you all have something to offer. At a minimum, you can listen. And sometimes just being a listening ear, it's remarkable. Have you ever had that happen where you're in a conversation with someone and they're really just listening and asking you good questions and you walk away and you're like, that was so helpful. They had such great things to say. Someone's like, well, what did they tell you? I don't really know. But it was good. I can't remember a thing they said. But it was good. Right? Like, maybe what you can do is listen. But my guess is that even beyond that, if you've been on the planet for more than a decade or so, you have something that you can offer, some way in which you can invest in someone who's trying to find their way. So I would encourage you this week to prayerfully think about, to ask God, like, who are the people in my life that I could invest in? Who is the person in my life that my heart might be kind of moving towards opening up to, that I want to pour into? And what might that look like? How could you initiate that? Don't get really creepy and like go up to them and be like, hey, I feel like I'm supposed to be mentoring you. That's just weird. Don't do that. But again, invite them out for lunch or coffee, or you know, send them a card, let them know you're thinking about them, praying for them, whatever seems appropriate. But reach out to someone today. Take a risk to invest in them. And this goes for teens too. Teenagers, you have no idea how much the kids a couple of years under you look up to you. You have an incredible opportunity. Some of the most formative relationships in my life in my high school years were older students who I knew who chose to acknowledge me in public and not treat me like some kind of weird leper, but actually spend time with me and invest in me and point out the things that they appreciated about me. If you do that as a teenager to kids who are younger than you, I guarantee you it'll blow their minds. They'll be thankful forever. So teens, you are not beyond this. Who are the Ruths in your lives that you can invest in? Pray about that today. Pray about that this week. Ask God who might be the people in your life that you could invest in. You could be a mentor to. I think this is one of the key ways that God speaks to us, that God moves us, is when we take the time to listen to mentors in our lives and to be mentors in the lives of others. And I think if we choose to do that actively, it'll transform not just our lives, but the lives of our community and the experience that it is for people to be a part of a community of faith like this. If this was a community of faith where everyone was actively looking for ways they could invest in others, the experience of being a part of this community would be exponentially better. So may we be that kind of community together. All right, we are going to take just a moment, and we're going to interact a little bit. Would love to hear your thoughts or questions. If you're new with us, again, we do this every week, where we just invite you to shoot your hand up if you have a question or a comment that you would like to make, and we'll interact around that a little bit, and then we'll finish up with a final song. Oh, we also, if you have something you'd like to say or a question you'd like to ask, you can also text it. If you're not comfortable asking it in front of people, you can text that, and we'll try and get to your texts as well. Oh, I got one. Always starts on the opposite side. Gets you warmed up. So you gotta. That's right.
Hey, Tim. So I have a question and a thought. Just personally, I've had experiences where I've had a relationship with someone where I've been a mentor to them, or vice versa, they've been a mentor to me, where at some point it just feels like, okay, this is good, and we can kind of move on. Either that person gets to a point where they just don't need me anymore, they're in a different place in life where they need someone else, or vice versa, where I see that the person speaking life into me is like, okay, you know, I've got other things I need to focus on. My journey in life is changing, or mine is changing, and mm-hmm. I need other voices in my life. What do you think about that?
Yes, I absolutely agree. So I think where we get in trouble, whenever you go into a mentoring relationship or this kind of a relationship where you need the other person to need you, it's going to get really gross really fast, right? Like if you need that person to tell you how awesome you are and how much you've invested in your life, that's not going to go well for either of you. And so I think the most healthy mentoring relationships, they generally have a timeline, at least in terms of, maybe they change, I should say, over time, right? Because, so I've had relationships with people who at one point in my life, I went to them as this wise sage, and at this point in my life, I consider them a friend. And I still think their advice is really important, but we just don't have the same relationship. They don't expect that of me, I don't expect that of them. And I think any healthy relationship like that should move through stages. There will be times when the thing, like, you're just going to hang on their every word and you're going to need to be with them and just get a download. And there'll be other times where maybe you talk once a year, maybe you get together for pizza sometime and that's cool, but it's just different. So yeah, I think healthy relationships can change like that, should change like that. It's good. Other thoughts? Questions? Oh, we got one over here. We try and plan this so that it's just back and forth the entire time. No, that's all right. Just joking.
I guess my simple question would be, is there a difference between being a mentor, like in the business field, how to get ahead in business, and any sort of like Christian angle on that? Like, is there, because I feel like some of the stuff about being a mentor could apply to just like self-help, mm-hmm. business.
Sure.
So, like, what makes a mentorship, maybe from a Christian perspective, different? Not a Christian perspective is bad.
Yeah.
Like, it's good to have a business mentor, probably, obviously. Yeah. But, like, is there anything that makes it unique Christian-y?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I do think, I mean, maybe the obvious one is that there's a focus on, like, Jesus and the way in which we are looking for Jesus to be at work in our lives. I think maybe even more broadly, by and large, most business mentoring or other kinds of mentoring are about how to do the things you need to do versus the character in the person. And I think when we're talking about mentoring in the way of Jesus, that we're primarily talking about the kind of people that we're becoming. It's not about how do you make more money, or how do you get ahead in business, or, you know, how do you get the house you always wanted. But how do you become the person you were created to be? How do you become someone who looks more and more like Jesus? That's kind of the primary thing, I would say. But some of the principles are very similar. Maybe one more comment, question, before we move into our final song. Well, why don't I'm going to pray for us, and then we'll have the worship team come up. Father, thank you for the example of people like Naomi. We're really grateful that she was willing to step up, and even in her position of seeming weakness and need, she was able to offer wisdom and direction. And Lord, I pray for us that we would be aware of the opportunities that we have in our life to act as a mentor, to act as someone who can invest in others, can point the way, can encourage, can listen well, can walk with as they navigate life. And give us courage and humility to recognize the places where we need those people in our lives, where we need Naomi's, where we need people who can walk with us and encourage us and give us wisdom. And would you help us as a community to grow into a community of Naomi's and Ruth's, people who are actively looking to invest in one another and help us along the way as we learn to live and love and follow Jesus together. It's in his name that we pray.